All right, we're beginning here on the top of Kuf Aleph, Amud Aleph, by the second set of two dots. Ibailuhu. Yesh shevach smanim ala tzemer, oein shevach smanim ala tzemer. The way Rashi phrases the question here is based on, later on in the Gemara, a question that the Gemara poses, which is, does the chazuta, does the appearance of the color on the wool have value to it? So the easiest way to phrase the question is to say, when you have a colored beged, or you have tzemer that was dyed, do you have wool that is dyed, or do you have dyed wool? The difference being is whether you can separate or segregate out the value of the tzeva of the color. And we'll see now that the Gemara is going to present questions where that is essential to know or to be able to segregate the item. So do we view it as a singular item now, which is this dyed wool? Or do we look at it as wool with dye in it, and that they are actually separable or independent values? Again, we'll see in a second, it makes a difference in terms of certain questions in the halacha. So now, Amara says, Heichi dami, what exactly is this scenario here? Ilema de gazal smanim vidakinu vitarinu. He stole the dye, or the raw materials for the dye. Then he pulverized them, ground them down, soaked them. Basically, he made them into the liquid dye or whatever needs to be placed into the cauldron to dye the wool. Bitzavaben, and then he actually used them to dye something. Typically, mishum dekaninu bishinui. There, it's very clear that he's going to have to pay back this manim because there's a shinui. There's a significant change in the item, and that means that he's konet the item with that significant change, and he pays kishata gzela. He pays at the time that he stole it. So now it doesn't matter what the value is or what we look at it now, because the value determination is made at the time of the gzela because he did such a great shinui in the item. So lo tzricha the gazal smanim shruim b'tzavabu. So it was a case where he stole the ready-made dye. I mean, it was already processed and it was already a liquid or a dye that he could utilize. And then he uses it to dye something. My. Yesh shevach smanim agabi tzemer. Is there shevach smanim? Is there a value that is added to the tzemer because of the smanim? Damarle, havli smanai deshakaltinu. The person who was stolen from says, give me back the dye that you stole from me. Odilma ein shevach smanim agabi tzemer. And then four, damarle, leit lechagabai velomidei. Whereas the person, the thief, could say back to him, you don't have anything here. There's no longer anything of substance that is left over here. So in the first tzad, the idea is that there is some sort of separable value in the dye that is left in the tzemer. All you have in the tzemer now is color. There's a change in the color, the way that you see it, the aesthetics of this wool. Is that something that is of mamashut? And therefore, the person, the nigzal, can say to him, give it back to me, I want it back. Or can the gazlan say, there's nothing left here. You can shake this beged, you can do whatever you want with this beged. Nothing has changed. It's the same wool it was before. It's just a different color now. But appearance or color is not sufficient mamashut, sufficient substance to it to have to return it. There's nothing to return because you can't just peel away the color from the beged. The question, the way it's presented in the Gemara, is it's binary, which is that he has his wool, he stole the dye, dyed the wool, and now it's a question, does the nigzal have any rights to make a claim here because their dye or the color, whatever it is, exists, and therefore he has a right to it? And the other tzad is that it's not anything of mamashut, it's simply a visual experience that you see a different color, but there's no mamashut to it, so therefore you don't have to return it. You're all asking, wait a minute, he stole smanim, he stole dye, doesn't he have to return something? He got some benefit. So Tosafot phrases the question slightly differently, but says this, Tema, hare nehene, shit samro me'ule bitamim yoter, yishalei masha nehene. Whether or not there's mamashut to the dye now, the wool with the color in it is worth more than the wool was without the color in it. If that's the case, he should at least pay back masha nehene. And Tosfot brings the examples that we saw earlier in the Masechta with regards to the mazik of Shein. When it comes to Shein, even if you're not chayav for the Nezek, you are still chayav for mashinene, that the animal ate food and is now full. So you pay for cheap food, you don't pay for the expensive stuff he ate. But still, in the end, the animal ate and was satisfied and had nutrition from whatever was there. So even if you're not chayav as a mazik, you were still chayav just because you got hana'ah. And that hana'ah you have to reimburse for. And say the same thing over here. That's what it says. Why don't we say over here that even if you're not going to charge for the smananim because we can't get to them, they're not mamashut, it's only an intangible visual item, but still in the end he's getting benefit from that. His item is worth more money now. It is something that he enjoys more. Whatever you want to describe here, that's mashanene. That mashanene he should be obligated to pay for, even if he's not deemed to be a gazlan, or he doesn't have anything to return, at least that he should reimburse the person for. Tosfot says over here, v'yesh l'chalek, we'll have to differentiate between those cases we saw earlier in the Masechta and this. The hana'ah hacha ena ba'al yedei ma'asav, v'lo yedei ma'aseh be'emto. The hana'ah here is not coming from his action, or the action of his behemah. Whereas in the case before, by the eating, his behemah did the action and ate it and consumed it. In the case, he brings other examples where there's direct hana'ah l'gufo, where you personally benefit from something, even though you didn't touch it. Somebody puts food in your mouth and you end up swallowing it, you get hana'ah from it. Inami, hana'ah da'achal o'chashiv hana'ah, she'enu ela noi ba'alma yoter. So again here, he talks about that there isn't anything of substance that was stolen, because it's all aesthetic in nature, it's all the color. So what I'm going to say to you, and this is likely what the Gemara is saying, when you put the cauldron up with the dye inside of it, right, the dye doesn't disappear, the dye will be there afterwards. You would put a bag and you dip the wool in there, the wool is dyed, and the dye still exists. He could return the cauldron or the dye that he had, whatever was there, he can return, or the leftovers he can return. The question is, with the dye that is now embedded in the beged, does he have to return that, or is there a substance to it? Because that dye, there's no physical manifestation of the dye in the beged, meaning in terms of substance. The only thing you have there is color. So the question is that color something that he took away, or a value that he took away from the dye itself? The answer, you would say, logically should be yes, because you can dye less items now than you did before. But the Gemara wants to know, does that color, does that appearance enough to be considered real value that he has to return when he steals it? Now again, the Gemara is going to work through different scenarios to come up with what exactly the situation is. So Amrei, V'ein shevach smanim agabi tzemer, even if you say there's no such thing as shevach smanim on the tzemer, mi amatzi amarle leit lach gabai velomide. How can he say to him that you don't have any value here? Namely, havle smanai d'afsadinu. Why don't you give me the smanai, which I don't have here anymore? Meaning that you've utilized at least a portion of my smananim, or you've done something with my item, and it's no longer here. So why don't you have to reimburse me at least for that? Maybe the color in the bag, it isn't valuable, but either now there's less dye to be used, or whatever I had in my hands no longer exists, why don't you have to replace it? Ela lahach gisa. Now this is the way to view it. Ein shevach smanim agabit semer, ubay shlumele. There is no shevach smanim agabit semer, and therefore he has to reimburse him. Odilma yesh shevach smanim agabit semer, v'amalei hamantche kamach shaklinu. So Gemara says, maybe it's actually the opposite way around, which is that we were questioning before whether he had stolen anything. That's the way we saw the nature of the question was there a theft here or not? The Gemara goes, obviously there's a theft here because the guy is left with less of what he had before. He has less dye than he had before, or the raw materials for the dye are gone. Whatever it is, he's missing something that needs to be reimbursed for. So the question is not that, but rather, the question is, the beged with the color in it, what can he say to the nigzal? Can he say to the nigzal, listen, your color is right here, come and take it. Whenever you want, you can have it back. It's all yours to take. On the other hand, if you say that the no shevach smanim, that it's not really a separate existence from the wool, again, it's not wool with dye in it, it's dyed wool. If it's dyed wool, you can't argue to him to come and take his dye back. If it's wool with dye in it, then you can say to him, go, take your dye back. You can have it back whenever you like. Come and take it. The Gemara says, shaklinu, but my shakle. What do you mean, come and take it? How exactly is he going to take his dye back? The Gemara says, bitzafon, that he uses soap. We saw this before in the Gemara, the idea that you can wash out the dye. The dye is not permanent. It's reversible because if you use some sort of strong soap, you'll be able to remove it. Gemara says, Tzofon avure mi'aver hashava lo avit. Soap, or if here you use bleach, is successful at removing the color from the baguette, but it doesn't return you the color or the dye itself. It simply removes the dye from the baguette. Ella hachabai eskinan, gagon shegazal tzemer vismanim dechad. He stole, so now, unlike what we had said until now, where he stole just the dye, now he's stealing not only the dye, but the wool too. So he steals the wool and the dye. Vitzavei lautzemer bahanach smanim. So he uses the dye of the person who owned the tzemer, so he's stolen both items, and basically he did for him what you would have expected is that you dyed the wool. V'kamahadale niyale the tzemer. After doing this really altruistic theft, he goes ahead, he says, you know, I took your wool, I took your dye, and now I return you the dyed beged. The question is this. Yesh shevach smanim agave etzemer. Again, do we have wool with dye in it? V'kamahadale smanim v'tzemer. And therefore he accomplishes the requirement of v'heshivet gzela asher gazal. Because he's handing back wool with dye in it. Odoma ein shevach smanim agave etzemer. Or maybe when you have wool that is dyed, it's just dyed wool now, which means that the dye is not separable or independent of the tzemer. V'tzemer mahadale smanim lo mahadale. So he's only returning him the wool, he's not returning him the dye. So that is the question, the nature of the question now. We've slowly moved, but now the nature of the question is it considered to be significantly separate or independent enough that it's considered to be v'yeshivat agzela asher gazal when you return the beged with the dye in it? So Amrei. Typically, diakarle niale bidme. So now, even if you believe that it's not wool with dye in it, it's dyed wool, he still has increased the value of the tzemer. The tzemer prior to this was just plain wool that was worth less. Now you have wool with dye in it, but we're calling it dyed wool. But dyed wool is worth more than wool. That means that the value of the dye is manifest in the baguette. So when he returns the beged now, even if you call it dyed wool, he's returning more than just the wool, he's returning wool plus. That wool plus should be, or the coverage, or the equivalent value of the wool plus the dye. Meaning that, in a real sense, it should be that he's returning him more value than less value. Because prior to this, he had wool separate from the dye. This individual did the labor that made it that the wool and the dye are together. So now when he goes out to market, when you have the dyed wool, that dyed wool's value should exceed the value of the wool and the dye separately because somebody actually did the work and dyed it. So if that's the case, he should be able to claim to him, look, I'm giving you back at least the value that I stole, maybe even more value than I stole. So why shouldn't that be considered to be a proper hashava? So it says, lo tzricha dezal tziva, that there was a market depreciation in. Now, the question of what it means in, Rashi says here, in dyed wool. Meaning that dyed wool, there was an excess or a glut of dyed wool. Therefore, these separate items were worth more than the whole. So it means that the semer, the wool itself, and the dye itself separately would garner more value than dyed wool. Maybe you could use the dye for something else, maybe you could use the semer for something else. But either way, the separate items are more valuable than when they're put together. So even though normally, or in a normal situation, the dyed wool should be worth more, because it's both a combination of the two raw materials plus the labor that went into it, nevertheless, since there's a glut of dyed wool, it turns out that that price is below what the separate items were worth. So now when he's doing a hashava, now you really need to know what's going on. Because if you're talking about value, certainly in terms of value, he's not returning the value that he stole, because it's less valuable than the two items separately that he stole. Attorney can't make a claim, I'm returning you more value. So here, where the value is below the separate items, he can't make a claim that I'm returning you the value of what I stole, because it's not true. So now the only other claim that he has is, I did v'shevet gzela asher gazal, which is that the gazlan has the right to say harei shalcha lefanecha and hand him the item back, no matter what the fluctuations in the price of the item are. As long as you hand the item back, you've accomplished v'shevet gzela asher gazal. So now that's the question here. Is the smanim still a separately distinct item from the beged? Again, do you have dyed wool? and therefore you're not returning him wool and dye, or do you have wool with dye in it, and therefore I can return this, and I'm giving you back both of your items, and it doesn't matter what the micah price is, I'm giving you back. I'm shivit gzeila asher gazal. So that would be the nature of the question. So now that's the way Rashi reads it. The Gilyan Ashas, Rabbi Kiva Eger, says, I don't understand why Rashi did that. I would have just said, and this is what he says, Lefize, the Zol Tziva, Hainu, Semer, Tzavua, Huzal, Aval Esmanim, Atzam, Lo Huzlu. But the dye itself didn't go down in value. He says, Vamai, Lo Amri, Bibshitut, the Huzlu Esmanim. Why don't you just simply say that dye went down in value? So then, in that case, when he stole the items, the value of the items that he stole were in excess now of what a dyed beged is. Because at the time of the theft, dye was expensive, wool was expensive. He now dyed the beged. You would have expected that the value now of the dyed beged exceeds the separate costs of the raw materials. Problem is that the price of dye plummeted. So now when the price of dye plummeted, the beged or wool that is dyed cannot exceed so much, but the value of the raw materials that go into it. Since the raw material costs have dropped significantly, therefore also a dyed beged is going to be worth less now. So now when he returns the dyed beged, he's not going to have something that is of equivalent value to what he stole. Because of the market price plummeting for dyes, that also affects what dyed wool is worth now. And so therefore the dyed wool that he's handing back does not reach the value of the wool and the dye separately when he stole it, the price of what it was, or the value of what it was when he stole it. So he doesn't have a claim over there. So mikom akom, gemen den shevach smanim, velo mikrei hashava, have kene'evada gzela, demishalim kishata gzela. Because therefore, since it's not separable at that time, then he has to return the cost of the item when he stole it. And since he can't return it because it's not separable, and there's not enough value in the beged to cover the original theft, he's going to have to make compensation to make him whole for the monies that he stole. So he says, v'tzarachiyun. He leaves that as a tzarachiyun as to why Rashi focused on the dyed wool going down in value and not just the dye going down in value. The truth is that when the dye goes down in value, so does the dyed wool go down in value. So it's not an earth-shattering question. So then he asks on the Gemara itself and says, why don't we suggest here that the case is a case where the price of dye went down so much that the actual beged with the dye in it, dyed wool, is actually worth less than the tzeva itself, than the dye itself originally. So that the combined item is worth less than the dye. Why do you have to steal the dye and the tzemer? Just have him steal the dye. And then now he has this beged with dye in it, but the beged with dye in it is worth less than the original value of the dye. And in that question, you would formulate or structure a question that was similar to what the Gemara is saying over here, which is that the value embedded in the item that you have now does not meet the value of what you stole. And once you do that, you need to know whether you're doing Veshivit Gzela Asher Gazal and you're giving him back the item or not. And then you have to make a value decision. The value decision doesn't make it whole. And so you'd have to compensate in that case. Ibai Deima, the other way to frame it is Kigon Shetzava Bahu Kofa. So now here there are a number of different explanations of this. Let us assume that the word right now, kofa, means a monkey. So Rashi brings in this first interpretation that he stole not only dye, but he also stole a monkey. And then he dyed the monkey. And now he's giving it back. So over there, there's no increase in value because a dyed monkey is not worth more than a monkey that doesn't have dye on it. So that's one way that Rashi explains it. Rashi then brings a second explanation, which again would be more palatable. The only problem is that in the continuation of the Gemara, it doesn't sound like this. It sounds like the word kofa here does mean a monkey. But Rashi brings a second interpretation, which is Armila Kupa Shel Nitzarim. It was a basket that he stole. He stole dye and a basket, and then he dyed the basket. So that case, again, there, maybe it's not worth more afterwards, the dyed basket, than it was worth before, because what do you need a dyed basket for? Oh, why is that different than tzemer? Because normally dyed wool is worth more. Over here, a basket, which isn't really subject to dyeing, when you dye it, you haven't really increased value, or haven't done anything that is valuable over here. So that's the other interpretation brought by Rashi. Tosfot over here says, V'teima dimkein afsadei biyadayim. What you guys are all laughing about is, once he dyes the monkey, not only is it not more valuable, he's actually injuring or doing something that's detrimental to the monkey, be a daim. It's like a destructive action over here, rather than a constructive action. And of course, he has to be chayav for this manim, because he did something that was a mazik. Benir lefaresh, betzavavahu kufa, klomar, bigriut ubikiur, kein kof, shumukhar. Basically, he says he dyed it like a monkey, which is that he dyed the wool, but he did a terrible job at it. He did it like as if a monkey had done it, not someone who had skilled craftsmen that's dying over here. So you get an uneven dye, you get streaking in the dyeing. So now there's no increase in value. Yes, the color's in the beged, but nobody's going to pay you more for the beged now, because the dyed wool is actually in a condition that is worse than getting it as plain wool, because the dyeing was done improperly. It's creating the same scenario as before, which is instead of being a market vagary that causes the price to plummet, over here it's his action that caused it to plummet because he didn't do a good job dyeing it. Ravina Amar, Ochav Ma'iskina, what's the case here? Kagon, the Tzemer Dechad, the Smanim Dechad. The wool belonged to one guy, and the dye belonged to another guy. Ba'ate Kof, and then a monkey comes, Vitzave Da'u Tzemer Banach Smanim. And he puts them together. So here you have two people with separate raw materials, and then a monkey comes along. A monkey we're using here because it means someone who's not culpable. So the monkey, when he takes action over here, the monkey's not going to be held liable for his action. Assume it's a wild monkey that goes along and does this, and he puts them together. Yesh zevach shmanim al gabi tzemer, damalei havli smanai de gabeich, ninhu. Is there a separate, independent value and substance of dye here, whereby the person who owned the dye can say to the person who owns the tzemer, give me my dye back, hand it back to me? Or maybe there is nothing of substance over here, it's simply appearance. That you have nothing with me. Again, here you would have to ask or say what Tosafot said before, which is that there is an increase in value. And if there's an increase in value, the Baal HaTzemer has to at least give him that, what he's nana, at least what he benefits from it. He may not have to pay for the whole value of the smanim, but at least he has to pay for the hana'ah that he is garnering over here. Tashma. So now the Gemara wants to determine, the Gemara has posed the question in a number of different ways, as to whether the color or the dye that is found in the wool is considered to be wool with dye, or dyed wool. Now it wants to actually find some proofs as to which way we are leaning. Tashma. Beged. Shitzav'o b'klipei orla. You have a piece of clothing that is now being dyed with the dye that was extracted from the klipei orla, which means the shells or the peels of something that was orla. Orla are fruits in their first 3 years on the tree. So they ate, it's not the tree itself, because that is not subject to orla. What is subject to orla is the pri, is the fruit itself. And not only the fruit itself, because there it says et pirio, means even something that is tefel, even something that is subsidiary or secondary to the fruit, which means the peels or the shells that are around the fruit, they are all subject to orla. So over here, where he has this extract of dye that came from the klipe orla, and now he puts it on the beged, he dyes a beged with it, what is the status? Orla is asur b'achila, but also asur b'hana'a. So now he has a beged, which is mutar. I mean, the clothing before this was totally fine, but now he has an isur hana'a that is inside the beged. Here it says, idalek, you have to burn it. I mean, that's the way that you rid yourself of the isur hana'a, is that you burn it. So here, where you put it in to the beged, you have to burn it. Alma chazuta miltahi. That means that appearance or color is something of substance, or it's real. And since it's not, you can't just say here, you have color that's here, and therefore there's nothing of substance, you don't have to rid yourself of this Isra Anah. No, the Isra Anah exists in the Beged, and therefore now you're going to have to burn the Beged and rid yourself of this Isra Anah, of this Orla. So from this, you would conclude that it is Chazuta Miltahi, that it is of substance, or that it's a separate, independent item inside of the Beged. Amarova, wait a minute. Hana'a hanira le'enayim asra Torah. Here, by Orla, there is a higher standard of what is considered Hana'a over here, which is that even aesthetic value is considered to be problematic with regards to Orla, which means that the fact that you look at the beged and see a different color, that Hana'a, that benefit, that aesthetics, is asur mina Torah. D'tanya, arelim lo yachel. They are arelim, and therefore you may not eat them. And this is found in Pashat Kiddushim. When it speaks about Orla, it says that these fruits are arelim, therefore you cannot eat them. Ein li ela isur achila. I only have an isur achila over here. Minayin shelo yehene mimenu. How do I know there's also an isur hana'ah? Velo yitzvabo, velo yedik boate ener. And you may not use it as a dye. You may not yedik boate ener. You may not light it as a candle. Tamar lomar, varaltem arloto et pirio. Arilim lo yeachel. Lerabot et kulam. To come to include all of these items. Meaning that the extraneous language, the additional language that is over here, indicates that there's not simply an Isur Achila over here, but there's also an Isur Hana'ah. But that Isur Hana'ah is more extensive than your classic Isur Hana'ah. It's any form of Hana'ah, any form of benefit that you would get from this, even if the item is intangible, even if the item doesn't exist. And therefore, the dying of the Beged, even if you were to say that it is not of substance and not a separable item, nevertheless, the fact that you are benefiting from that aesthetic color that is in there, that's enough to make it problematic vis-a-vis Orla. That doesn't mean, in general, that when you have dye inside the Beged, that you have mamashut, or you have something of significance that's there, or discrete that is there. It just means in this case, where there's an Isur Hana'ah, the Isur Hana'ah would prevent you from getting benefit from the aesthetic benefit of the dye being there, even if you can't conclude anything about the status of the dye itself that is found, or the color itself that is found inside the Beged. Tosfot over here says, why does the Braita specifically mention these two types of Hana'ah, one of which is dyeing, the other one is lighting a candle? Because every type of Hana'ah is asur with Orla. So why does it pick on these two items? It says, V'afagav da'asar shar hana'ot, itztech l'ribuye tzviya v'hadlaka. It has to include these two items. Tzviya, mishum dechazuto ba'almahu. Tzviya, dying because of exactly our problem here in the Gemara, which is, maybe there is nothing here. Maybe the fact that the color remains in the Beged is not something that is deemed to be hana'ah. The answer is that even aesthetic hana'ah is considered to be hana'ah. And by hadlaka, mishum shekala ha'isur b'shat hadlaka. If you light it as a candle, then you are in essence, b'mifa'er the orla. You're eliminating the orla through the burning of the orla. Who says that using it for light at that point in time is problematic? That hana'ah, because you are accomplishing what is necessary with this item, is to eliminate the isur, or the isur hana'ah. Who says that then you can't benefit from the light of that burning? So that's where the two examples that the Braita brings to say, even to that extent, whereas the color or the aesthetics, the visual aesthetics of the color, or you are eliminating the isur, but by eliminating it, you're also benefiting from the intangible light that is associated with it. Both of those are also included in this isur hana'ah. And that's what the Braita goes out of his way to show you, that the threshold of hana'ah is very, very high here, which is that any form of hana'ah whatsoever is restricted over here, even if the hana'ah is so intangible or something that is in the process of destruction, it's still considered to be asur. Alright, Tashma. Beged shitzva'o b'klipei shvi'it idalik. So here he used, instead of klipe orla, he used klipe shvi'it. So again, these are items from shvi'it, which Rashi says over here, and Rashi throughout the sugya says the same thing, which is that the pasuk says, by regards to shvi'it, it says lo ochla, that the perot shvi'it are available to you to be eaten, velo l'schora, and not for commercial or transactional needs. So Rashi says throughout the sugya, the problem is here is asur lasot schora beperotah. You're not allowed to do commerce business with the perot shvi'it. It's not clear that that is exactly what's happening over here. He's not dyeing the item in order to do commerce with it, to sell it, or to merchandise that item. He might just want it for himself. He's dyeing the Beged and then utilizing it for himself. So who says that that's the ochla velo the schora is subsumed under that? Rashi assumes that. I think you could argue that the Gemara has other limudim from achla velo, but you could basically say it's v'achla velo liibud in that way, which is that it's for eating and not for uses where it's destroyed or it is not utilized for its primary purpose. And that might be what the real limud is over here, not what Rashi is suggesting over here, that it's specifically connected to schora. Rashi, I guess, in assuming that there's a value increase in what you do, therefore it's as if that you are merchandising or using it as a commercial item. You're doing commerce with it because you're increasing the value of the item. That must be what Rashi is saying or indicating through here. But again, then you could come up with the Gemara's questions we had before, where if you dye the beged and it's worth less afterwards, so maybe, how do you then say that that's commercial or commerce because you actually detracted from the value? And that again would come under these ideas of achlav lo labeid, meaning that things that are done to eat and not to ruin it or to destroy the item, which might be the problem. But either way, there's a problem of doing this with peirot shvi'it. Again, the etzim themselves, the wood itself is not the problem, because wood is not subject to shvi'it and not subject to orla. So in both of these cases, we're talking about the peirot. So he uses the klipei peirot of shvi'it to dye something. Again, it says yidalek, that it is burnt. Shiny hotam, again, by shvi'it, the din is different. Amakra, that the pasuk says, tiyeh b'havyata tehei, that it still remains intact, or its kedusha is passed on. The Gemara uses this in other places with regards to peirot shvi'it, as if that you transfer the kedusha from the peirot shvi'it. If you take the peirot shvi'it and then you use them to barter for something else, or get cash, and then with that cash buy something else, the din by shvi'it is that the original item remains kadosh, and then the last item that you buy also is kadosh. There the Gemara uses this term of tiyeh b'havyatatei. The kedusha remains in the item. So that true would be true here as well. When you dye the beged with it, the peirot shvi'it are very, call it sticky, both literally and figuratively over here, which is that the kedusha does not leave them easily. And therefore, even if they're manifest and dye, the kedusha stays. It just doesn't go anywhere. Even in its changed form, even if it's been redeemed, all sorts of differences that happen don't change the fact that the kedusha remains. So again here, what we're saying is, yes, in this case, you are right. The appearance, the aesthetic change in the beged has some problem with it. It makes it asur ba'na'ah. But again, it might be unique to shvi'it, which has this special status. So both times we brought a proof. We brought it from Orla, and then we brought it from shvi'it. In both of those instances, we said it's unique to those dinim. It may not be extrapolable to other areas of halacha. Rava Rami. Rava brings a stira. It's not. There's a Mishnah. Begech hitzuva o biklipe orla yidalek, which is what we just quoted before, the Mishnah, that if you dye a beged with klipe orla, yidalek, which means it's asur bana, alma, from there you would conclude, chazuta miltahi, that aesthetics or the color has value, and therefore there's an isurana over here. Viraminu, is that really true? Reviat adam shenivla ababayit. If you have a reviat dam, a reviat of blood from an individual that is found inside of a house, the house would be subject to tumata ohel, tumata mate that is in an ohel. That is because when it comes to a mate, when it comes to whatever you're talking about, a cadaver, there are both certain parts of the cadaver as well as certain materials that are exuded from the cadaver that have the same status as the cadaver itself. So obviously if you have a whole body, there's tumata mate, and there's tumata ohel in the house. There are also other items which the Mishnayot and Ohelot go through which have that same status. Rov Minyan, Rov Binyan, there are all sorts of qualifications. One of those is Reviat Adam. That if you have a Reviat of Dam, of a mate, inside the house, that's the equivalent of having the mate in the house, and it's subject to tumata ohel. Rashi quotes the source for that, which is Al Kol Nafshot Mate Lo Yavo. And the Gemara Darshins, what is the dam that the nefesh is chai bahen or mate bahen? The Gemara assumes that reviat adam is, we'll call it the life force of the individual. That if a person loses a reviat of dam, ki adam hu nefesh, quantitatively, what is that? Chazal determined that it's a reviat adam, which again, today, we know that you donate blood and it's far in excess of a reviat adam, and a person is still able to live, but at least Chazal viewed it as being reviat adam. Therefore, a reviat adam is considered as if you have the whole mate there, because the reviat adam is what kept him alive. So if you have a reviat adam from him, you've basically got the whole mate. You've got the mate there, and therefore it's subject to tumat ohel. Bayit tameh. Therefore the house is tameh, subject to tumat ohel. V'amila bayit tahor. And we have another braita that says that it is tahor, that it's not subject to tumat tamet or tumat oel. Velo plige. That's not a question. Ha bekelim davo mikara. Ha bekelim da'atu b'lasof. So that is a case where the kelim that were there originally, those kelim for sure are tmeim. Because we know there was a full revit of dam that came into the house or that was there. Eventually that blood got absorbed into the ground. So now, when the revit adam was there, there was tumat ohel. As it becomes absorbed into the ground, or basically disappears, there's no longer a revit adam there. Therefore, kelim that were there before the revit adam entered, they certainly are tamei. Because when the blood came into the house, there was a revit, so there was tumat ohel. After a certain amount of time, and it got absorbed into the ground, or it evaporates, there's less than a revit there. At that point, kelim that are brought into the house are not going to be tamei because there's no longer tumat ha'oel anymore. There's no longer a revit dam. So the difference in the outcome as to whether you're tamei or tahor depends on whether the keli preceded the dam being in the house or whether they succeeded it being there, meaning that they only came afterwards and therefore they're not subject to tumat ha'oel because there's no longer a revit dam here. It was absorbed into the ground. Nivla biksut. If it was absorbed into a beged, so now you have a revit dam. For instance, it was in a rag that was wiped up the revit adam, and now the rag is taken into the house. Do you have tumat ha'oel or do you not have tumat ha'oel? The blood or revit dam of blood quantitatively is there inside of the beged. So when you bring it in, is that considered like there's a revit adam in the house? Or is its absorption into the beged change the fact that it's no longer a revit adam? Ro'im, what do we do? If you launder the beged, and then you extract volumetrically a revit dam, then in that case, tmeyah, then it is tumat ha'oel. V'imlav, and if not, tehorah, then you don't have tumat ha'oel. Question is there a revit dam over here, or is there not a revit dam? How do I check that? I launder it, I cleanse the beged, and I see if I can extract the revit dam from it. In 1 second, we'll talk about exactly how that's done. So then, v'im lav tahorah. But what you see from here is that all the braita is interested in is whether there is or isn't a revit dam. The fact that this beged, this cloth, is red, and it has manifest in it the blood, and you can see the color of the blood there, that doesn't seem to be an issue at all. It doesn't even seem to be a consideration. Which means that, against what we said before, chazuta lav miltahi. That visuals or aesthetics or color are meaningless. In the case of the klipei or la, we're saying that, well, that's hana'ah, and it's clear here that you can see the color, that's definitely there. If you can see the color, it's there, and you gotta burn it, you gotta get rid of it. Over here, we see the blood, it's in the cloth, and we don't say, oh, you see it, it's there. No, we say you gotta figure out if it's really volumetrically there. You have to do some sort of test to see whether there really is a revit dam or not inside of this beged. Why is that? Why don't you just say that you can see it? It must be there. So the answer the Gemara says is no. Amar Rav Kana mikulei reviot shanukan. This is a kula with regards to revit bedam tvusa derabanan. We are speaking about the blood of the tvusa, which is only a din of tumata oil mi derabanan. And since it's tumata oil mi derabanan, they were mekul in this case that only if there really is a revit dam there do we say that you have tumata oil. That the visuals don't make a difference. Okay. So dam here, the answer about this case is actually a machloket, Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan later on in the Masechta. And the answer given here in the Gemara is only according to the Shita of Reish Lakish. And that is because, according to Rabbi Yochanan, it's not a question. Rabbi Yochanan says that how do you know if something's there or not? Depends if you care that it's there or not. That is like a chatzitza. We see this with regards to going to the mikveh or putting something in the mikveh, both on a person themselves or in a beged. If there is a stain on there, if there is some sort of dirt on there, if the person is makpid to remove that item or that dirt, then it's considered a chatzitza because you care about it. If you don't care about it, then it's not considered to be a chatzitza because it's batel to the beged or it's batel to the guf because you wouldn't have removed it anyway. That's how Rabbi Yochanan deals with this, and he says that the whole question here with regards to the revit adam is all about whether it's makpid or not makpid. Meaning, does he care that it's in there, or does he not care that it's in there? And therefore, there's not going to be any question here. You just say here, he doesn't care, Or the fact that even if you washed it out, there'd be residual blood left in there. That doesn't matter. It's a question of whether, does he care that there's blood in the cloth, or does he not care there's blood in the cloth? That determines of whether it's there or not. So for Rabbi Yochanan, it's not a question. Reish Lakish, on the other hand, who says it's not totally bikveda, therefore he has to solve the problem. And the problem here is solved according to Reish Lakish by saying that the case here is dam tvusa. Now dam tvusa is, as Rashi notes over here, harug she yatsami men revia dam bichayav ubimoto. You have a cadaver here who was killed, and blood emanated from him while he was still alive, and after he passed away. So now that, safek kula b'chayav, safek kula b'moto, we're uncertain as to whether the blood was emitted while he was still alive, versus the blood being exuded or emitted after he passed away. Big difference between whether it is the blood afterwards or before, because it makes a difference as to whether the blood is subject to tumata oil, is tamei or not tamei. So that is determined by whether it came out while he was alive or while he was dead, but here we don't know. So that's why it's dam tvusami derabanan, because there's uncertainty about when it was exuded, and so that uncertainty, even if it's mixed together, we're choshesh for it, and we assume that this revi'at dam is problematic, but it's only a chashash midrabanan. Because midoraita, it's all a safek, and since it's a safek, we would say that it's not subject. It's a safek that would go the kula because of the fact that it's a safek that, it's not just usually like a safek doraita that you go the chumrah, but it's a safek that involves a numerous sfekot. So in doing so, now, Gemara resolves this problem that Rova raised, which is that these cases are different because they have different qualifications, which is the case of Orla, it's a question of Isra Ana, and is Isra Ana midoraita. So over there, Chazuta is significant. Over here, we're dealing with Dam Tvusa midorabanan, and therefore, we're dealing with something that's really a safek or not even tuma doraita. And so therefore, we do not apply chazuta is miltahi. And that's why you get a different din in these two cases. Tosfot already points out, why did Rova even need to do this? On the previous Samud, we already established that Orla is different because of the Pasuk. The Pasuk by Orla said that Orla is unique, and therefore you can't extrapolate the din. So how is he bringing a steer over here? And it was Rova who says it on the previous Samud. It was Amar Rova. Hanani Raleinai Masrat Torah. So here, Rava already made that distinction, and now he's asking the question that almost ignores the distinction that he made before. So there are two ways to deal with that. Either to say what Rava said before was just a dechuya. All he's saying is that you can't prove anything from Orla. You're right, it looks like from that it is a chazuta, is miltahi, but you can't prove anything from it. And so that was just a dechuya ba'alma, what he said on the previous simud, and here is his real question. That's one way to deal with it, that's not so simple, because in the end, if you think there is a dichoy, then you can't ask the question as a absolute question, because there is a way out of the problem. The other possibility, which Tosfot says, is that the girsa here is incorrect, that the girsa should be rabba and not rova, which means that previously, on the previous amud, it should have said rabba, and over here it's rova. That way you have two different people with the memrot, and that would make a lot more sense, because then that's rabba's answer. Rova didn't accept it, and therefore he asked the stira over here. The second thing is, what is the test by which you get the revi'at dam out of the beged? Rashi over here describes the test in the following manner. What he does is he comes and takes water, measures the water volumetrically, then he launders the beged and re-measures the water that is there. If the water that is there now has a revi'at more of liquid in it, then that means that there was a revi'at dam in the beged, because after you laundered the beged, you have more liquid than you had beforehand. How much more? Oh, it's a revi'at more. Then you know there was a revi'at of dam in the beged. The Balei Tosafot reject that out of hand and say it's just not right. If you launder a beged, some of the liquid, even if you started with a certain amount of liquid, not all the liquid ever comes back. You never get everything back. There's a loss of liquid. So you're never going to get a proper measure of what is happening over here. So what the Balei Tosafot say is that you launder the beged, and then you have the residual water after the beged is laundered. It is discolored. It has water, which is clear, and it has blood in it. The two together have a certain appearance. Then what you do is you take the same quantity of water and put a revi'at dam into it. And then you compare the color visuals between them. You need, a spectrometer, but you have to measure the color appearances of the two. Because Tosafot says in the end, the ratio will be the same. Because if Tosafot is right, you're going to lose some water in the beged, and some of the blood's not going to come out. But nevertheless, on a ratio basis, the same amount of water that's trapped in the beged is true of the dam as well. And so if that's the case, if you have the same, start with the same amount of water and put a revia dam in it, it'll have a certain appearance. When you take the beged, launder it, and it comes out, on a ratio basis, if there was a revia dam in the beged, or more than a revia dam in the beged, then on a ratio basis, the water and blood still trapped in it, but the shading or the coloring of that which comes out should be the same as the proportions of revia dam with the water that you started. And that's how he says you measure over here whether there was a revia dam in there. Rav Rami, it's not. We have a mission that says, Mimina tzovim, when it's items that are used for dye, sviche, stim, in other places it's actually called stis, with the samach at the end, vikotza. These are all different types of, I'm going to call them root vegetables that are used to make dyes. As Rashi notes over here that stim or stis is kruga belaz, which he calls karkom, saffron, although in other places it's associated with a blue or purple dye. And the kotza, he associates with gavda belaz, it's associated with a red dye. Yesh lehem shvi'it, uledmeim shvi'it. They have a din of shvi'it, and their monies, meaning that if they are exchanged for money, that money would have shvi'it as well. Yesh lehem bi'ur, they have bi'ur, they're subject to bi'ur, which means that when a fruit has kedushat shvi'it, if you go past the time period where it's available out in the fields, then you also have to be mevaer, you have to eliminate it from the house. I mean that there are times, which you get the calendars, which tell you that you have to finish up peirot shvi'it that are associated with these species by a certain time because they're no longer available out in the fields. If they're not available in the fields, you may no longer keep them in your house. So it is also subject to bi'ur, uludman bi'ur. Again, if it's exchanged onto money, the kedushat shvi'it is there and subject to bi'ur. Alma, eitzim yesh b'em mishum kedushat shvi'it. From this it would seem that wood has a din of shvi'it. Because that which you use over here to make the dye is something that is hard or solid. Whether it's the branches, whether it's the roots of these items, they are not things that are edible. They're not fruits, but it's the etzim themselves that are subject to the dyeing. And therefore, you have dushat shvi'it in the etzim. Viraminhu. Ale kanim va'ale gifanim. The leaves of the branches and the leaves of the vines. He piled them up into a storage or into a way to silo them. He did it on his field. Liktan achila. Had he picked them originally to eat them, then they have a din of kriyat shvi'it because they are then, quote unquote, peirot. They are edible parts of the tree or of the vine. Le'etzim, on the other hand, if he picked them to use them for kindling or firewood, there is no din of kshuat shvi'it. So what you see here from the two different cases, one by the Mishnah and Shvi'it, one by the Braita, is that the Mishnah and Shvi'it seems to indicate that Eitzim have kedushat shvi'it. Over here, it says that if you make it into Eitzim, then it doesn't have kedushat shvi'it. That is the stira that we're trying to deal with over here. Now Rashi over here says, why are we speaking about Svi'chim? Is because you don't plant on shvi'it. Since you don't plant on shvi'it, the only type of these items that you will have in the field is svichim, or the aftergrowths, the things that grew by themselves. And that's why the Mishnah specifically says svichim. On the other hand, the Bali and Tosafot say that that is not the case, because it's also true, or this din appears by Maiser and Peah, which is that the Mishnayot mentioned it not only by shvi'it, but also by Maiser and Peah. These same materials, or these same species that are mentioned here, the Sviche, Stim, and Kotza, those items are mentioned in other contexts besides Shvi'it. For Rashi, the only relevance of Svichim is in Shvi'it, because they are subject to Shvi'it, because of the aftergrowths that are left in the field. So Bali and Tosafot say the reason that they speak about Svichit is Svichim here is because these are a type of plants that remain in the ground for a number of years. They stay in the ground for 4 or 5 years. And then you utilize their roots. Once they have grown for a long period of time, or they've stayed in the ground for a long period of time, their roots are properly matured to the point where you can use them for the dye. And that's why he calls them svichim, svichim, because, not because it's aftergrowth or associated with the shvi'it, but rather because they remain in the ground for a long period of time. That's why they're called svichim. They weren't planted this year. They were planted many years ago. So now they're just growing and growing and growing, and now you're taking out whatever it is to use for the dye. That's in terms of the svichim. Now, umishani. This is the answer to the question of the stira. Amar kra, the pasuk says, le'ochla, to eat it. Mi shahanato ubi uro shavim. Only something where the benefit and the destruction happen simultaneously. So for instance, when you eat perot shvi'it, the hana'ah and the biur happen simultaneously. You're eating it, you're tasting the fruit, you swallow it, you're digesting the fruit. The destruction of the fruit happens simultaneously with the benefit or the hana'ah that you are gaining. That is not true, yatsu etzim, shanatam achar biuran. That is not true by wood, where the hana'ah, the benefit, happens after the burning of the wood. So it's not simultaneous with the burning of the wood, but rather after the burning of the wood. As Rashi notes over here, that is because it's a gachelet. The main usage or the main utility of the burnt wood is the coals that are created by the burning of the wood. It's not the heat or the light that is made by the burning of it, because you burn candles for light. Don't burn wood for light. If you talk about chimum, about warmth, you could burn wood to create warmth, but the main purpose or the main utility is not the warmth itself that is created, but rather the coals that remain afterwards upon which you cook, or that remain and you put them into a pan to heat. You can use them as a heating element afterwards, and that's why major hana'ah, or the primary hana'ah, comes from the coals, which is after the fact. The burning happened earlier, and now the coals exist. And therefore it's hanatan achar biuran, and therefore they do not qualify as perot shvi'it. So that's the answer of the Gemara, which is there is a difference. In terms of tseva, in terms of dying, hanatan ubiuran shaveh. By dying, what the Gemara is implying here is that dying is simultaneous. The reason why Rashi says this, aval minei tzvayim b'shakri tichat hayoreh kalach hashoresh v'kolet tseva. At the time that it's being boiled up in the cauldron, the root or whatever the item is being consumed as the color is being taken into the baguette. So the color takes in the baguette at the same time the destruction of the item happens. That's the way Rashi phrases it. That's how he says that the hana'a and the biur are simultaneous, is because the dye creation and taking into the baguette happens with the destruction of the item itself. Tosafot says that he doesn't see that as being the case, but rather he says the reason that they're considered to be shaveh is kehanatam kishalobshan. The hana'ah from the dye is when you wear the beged. When you wear the beged, you also wear down the beged. Meaning that clothing, as you wear it, becomes more used and has a certain amount of rubbing or friction that wears the beged down. So the use or the ruining of the dye or the color, which is what you're speaking about here, the destruction of the color happens from your wearing of the beged. While you're wearing the beged, the color slowly fades or is ruined with your enjoyment of the beged. You could obviously argue against both of their shitot, and that's why you have Rashi and Tosafot. There's a weakness in both of those shitot. For Tosafot, the weakness is that the color could fade irrespective of whether you're wearing it or not. It might be that the sun is bleaching it, and therefore the color is being ruined, and nothing to do with you are wearing it. Yes, the hana is happening, but the biur is not necessarily connected to that. And for Rashi, who says that the dye, the destruction of the root, and then the creation of the dye happens before you ever put in the beged into the cauldron. The color is already there when you put in the beged. You only do it once the color is already fully been extracted from the item, then you put the beged in there. Who says that it's happening simultaneously? Again, so there are weaknesses in both of their pshatim. Now the Gemara says, "Va'ika etzim demashchan dehanatan ubironan shaveh." What about the etzim of mashchan, which is a type of wood? Rashi says that is used shme'irin kener, that they burn like a candle. They are used as a torch, meaning that this type of wood burns slowly enough and in a manner that is similar to a candle. So therefore, its primary utility is not for heat or for coals, but rather for the light. And when you're talking about light, light is exactly the case of biuran and hanatan shaveh. You're benefiting from the light while it's being consumed, while it's being destroyed. So that would be shaveh, that hanatan biuran shaveh. That's the way Rashi describes it. Tosfot, on the other hand, says that Hanatanu Biran Shaveh, the Rahambeinu Chananel Perish, Vayikitsim de Mashchan, Shemechamimim Bo. That is wood that is used for its heat rather than its light. Kagon Mimidura Shesuya Litchamim. Like a large pyre that is made in order to heat oneself up. The Hanatanu Biran Shaveh, the Bishad Biran Mitchamim Kenegdan. At the time that he's putting up the fire, you are warming yourself up at that time. Peres Mishchan. And then what does Mishchan mean over here? Kamo Tamrei Mashchanan. Meaning Mashchan, the word Mashchan, or Shchuna, Tosfot says is heat or hot. So Etzim de Mashchan means that they are heating wood. They're not cooking wood. They are heating wood. Heating wood, their Biuran Vehanatan come at the simultaneously or at the same time. So Tosfot says that, therefore, it should be subject to Shvi'it because of that, or it should be a problem of being Mevaer, the fruits, in terms of Shvi'it. So Rashi says here that the Eitzim Mashchan are like candles, and that's why Yonatan Ubiran Shaveh. Tosfot says that these Eitzim the Mashchan are used for heat, and therefore Biuran ve'Anatan are Shaveh. So now, Amar Rava, Stam Eitzim v'Hasaka hein umdim. The answer is that the default status of wood is that it is utilized to fire up the oven. That is the default status of wood. Wood is not used for other purposes. Sometimes it is, but that is not its general usage. Therefore, when the wood grows out in the fields, or you have the tree growing out in the fields, the underlying assumption is that it's going to be used for hasaka, for firing up the oven, firing up the stove. Therefore, the wood never attains kedushat shvi'it. Later on, if you utilize the wood in a manner that has biuran v'hanatan shaveh, even though there are possibilities of that, like in our case, whether according to Rashi, using it as a candle, or according to Tosfot, using it to heat yourself up next to it, that is not the primary purpose of wood. Since at the beginning of its growth, stam eitzim or lasaka, they never attained kedushat shvi'it. Once they never attained kedushat shvi'it, when you utilize them in a manner that would have bestowed in them kedushat shvi'it, that's not relevant anymore because they're not subject to kedushat shvi'it anymore. Therefore, it's after the fact. On the other hand, alei kanim and alei gifanim, you cannot say that. The leaves of the grape leaves and the leaves of the tree, those are used both for kindling and for eating. Both of those are equal utilities of these items, and therefore they're both possible usages of them, and therefore the din of shvi'it will apply depending on what you do with them. If you pick them to eat them, it shows that they are subject to kedushat shvi'it. If you pick them to use for firewood, it shows that they are not subject to shvi'it, because there's no stam, there's no default over here. By wood, there is a default, and the default for wood is to be utilized in a manner that would not subject it to shvi'it. Therefore, it never gains or garners kedushat shvi'it. And when you use it later on in a manner that would have given it shvi'it, it doesn't matter because at the time that it was manifest in the fields, it wasn't subject to kedushat shvi'it. Then items like these leaves, which are used for both items and equally used for both items, there's no default. And that means that whether it's subject to shvi'it or not will be determined as to how you utilize it. And that will determine whether it has kedushat shvi'it or does not have kedushat shvi'it. Amar Rav Kana, Ve'itzim la'saka tena'ehi. The fact that itzim are la'saka is a machloket tana'im. Rashi over here describes the machloket in the following manner. Ikad lan da'amar stam itzim la'saka nitnu. There is an opinion that the default status of wood is that it's going to be used, the hasaka, to fire up the oven, meaning to make it into coals. V'lo chayla shvi'it afilo itzim de'mashchan. And therefore there's no kedushat shvi'it, even on these itzim de'mashchan that are utilized in a different manner. Ve'ikad lan da'leitle. There are some that say that there's no default status of wood as being used for hasaka. That means that it would be up in the air as to whether it's subject to kedushat shvi'it, depending on the way that you would utilize it. And therefore, itzim de mashchan, whose primary utility is in a way that biuran and hanatan are shaveh, therefore they will be subject to kedushat shvi'it according to this. So Rashi basically says, the machloket is about what is the default status of wood. The implications are with regards to Eitzim de Mashchan, as to whether they are subject to Shvi'it or not subject to Shvi'it. That's the way Rashi terms it. Tosfot, on the other hand, says, or brings an alternate girsa. Our girsa is Amar Rav Kana, Eitzim lehasaka isnahi. The fact that Eitzim are for hasaka, that is the machloket tana'im. On the other hand, the other girsa is Amar Rav Kahana veitzim dehasaka tanaihi. That etzim of hasaka is the machloket tanaim. Perush kol etzim b'shvit have you plukta to tanaiy? E b'kedushat shvit or lo? It's a much broader machloket. Does wood have a din in shvit or does it not have a din in shvit? And then the Gemara is now going to bring a machloket tanaim to tell you how that works. So for Rashi, it's not a question about all wood. It's not a question, does all wood have Kedushat Shvi'it? Does all wood not have Kedushat Shvi'it? It's clear that wood does not have Kedushat Shvi'it because wood is not Hanatanu Biran Shaveh. The only question is that a default or not a default? The implications are by Etzim Demashkan. And then the way Tosfot is framing it is, it's a much bigger question. Does wood or do Etzim have a din in Shvi'it or not have a din in Shvi'it? That's the question, period. If that's the question that is being determined over here. Now the Gemara brings the Braita. D'tanya, ein mosrim perot shvi'it lo lemishra v'lo lekvusa. You're not allowed to use perot shvi'it to soak the flax in, and you're not allowed to use perot shvi'it lo lekvusa for laundering in. V'Rabbi Yosi omer, notim perot shvi'it letocha mishra v'lo letocha kvusa. You're allowed to soak them, or use them to soak the flax. You're allowed to launder with them. My time in the Rabbanon, what's the reason behind the Rabbanon Amakra? Le'achla, v'lo lemishra, le'achla, v'lo lekvusa. It is used to be eaten, not for laundering, not for soaking your flax. So again here, Rashi throughout of this calls it tzchora. The same thing that Rashi said before. All of these are commercial uses of perot shvi'it, which is disallowed because of achla v'lo l'tzchora. Rashi again and again and again says that. Rashi seems to think that everything is a derivative of that idea of tzchora, which means not using it for its purpose of eating, but rather for something else. That's called tzchora. Again, we just spoke about what the alternative is. Rabbi Yosi Amar, Kra, the Pasuk says, Lachem, that the perot shvi'it are for you. Lachol, sarchichem, whatever you want, whatever your needs are, you're allowed to use the perot shvi'it. Rabbanan, anami aktiv lachem. According to Rabbanan, also says lachem. Lachem, dumia de lachla. You're right. It's for your benefit. You can utilize them for whatever you want, but it's got to be similar to eating. B'mish anato ubiro shavim. That's the qualification. You're allowed to benefit from them. You're allowed to utilize them in a manner that is similar to achila, which is where hana'a and biuron shaveh. Yatsu, mishrav, kvusa, shenatam, achar biuron. Excluded from that are soaking flax and laundering where the hana'a comes after they are destroyed. In that the utilization of the flax and the laundered beged, the hana'a is after the fact, not at the time that you're actually utilizing the perot shvi'it. Rabbi Yossi nami aktiv la'achla. What is Rabbi Yossi going to do with the word la'achla? Amar lacha. I need that for this braita. Titania la'achla v'lo melugma. You can eat it, but not use it as a plaster or for medicinal purposes. You have to eat it, you can't use it as a medicine or as a plaster or some sort of wound healing self. Ataomer la'achla v'lo melugma. O'enu elo la'achla v'lo lekvusa. How do you know what to exclude and what to include? Shomer lachem. Hari kvusa amur. When it says lachem, it says you can utilize it for yourself. Ha nemi kayim lachla, lachla v'lo lugma. So what do you do? He says, okay, lachla means use it for eating and not for this self. On the other hand, he's saying that when it says lachem, you can do whatever you want with it. You can launder with it. You can soak the flax with it. Umaraita. Well, how do you know the rabota kvusa lo tzietam lugma? How do you know what to include and what to exclude? Mirabe ani et kvusa sheshave b'chol adam. I'm going to include laundering, which is equal to everyone. Everybody wants clean clothing. Everybody wants laundered clothing. A melugma is only valuable to someone who's sick or injured or has a wound. It's not valuable to everybody. So therefore, I'm going to include things that everybody gets benefit from. Those you can use perot shvi'it from. Things that are much more particular to a specific class of individuals or only certain types of individuals get hana from them, then you cannot use perot shvi'it for that.
So Rashi over here explains how this braita shows the machloket with regards to etzim is because the chachamim over here established that stam perot are la'achila. And since stam perot are la'achila, they are subject to kedushat shvi'it. And therefore, after the fact, where you want to come along now and make a determination with regards to whether you use them for eating or for mishra kvusa, you don't have that right because they are subject to kedushat shvi'it. And similarly, the Rabbonon would hold by etzim that stam etzim lahatsaka. And since stam etzim lahatsaka, there is never kedushat shvi'it that is chal on those items. given that neither of those items' status is determined by the subjective utilization of these items by the individual. So it doesn't matter what you use the wood for in the end, because stam etzim lasakha, they never attain kedushat shvit. Stam peirot achila, doesn't matter what you used for them for in the end, they are subject to kedushat shvit. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi believes that stam peirot are not the achila. Therefore, it matters what you pick them for. If you pick them to use for kvusa or mishra, that is permitted according to Rabbi Yossi. If you pick them to eat, then they will be subject to kedushat shvit. Similar to Alei Kanim and Alei Gefanim. It's all determined by the subjective utilization of the item as to whether they have Kedushat Shvi'it. And the same would be true by Eitzim, where we would not say that Stam Eitzim are the Hasaka. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yossi, when you take the Atzei Mashcha, they have a din of Kedushat Shvi'it, since you're going to utilize them either for heating or for a candle. That's how Rashi describes the extrapolation of the machloket from the Braita to the statement at the beginning of the Gemara of whether there is a machloket Tanaim as to whether Stam Eitzim are Asaka or not Asaka, and then the implications of that with regards to the Atzei Mishcha. And therefore, according to Rashi, the sugya before, where we were trying to resolve the stira in Shvi'it, that's all according to the Shita of the Chachamim. That's the way Rashi describes it over here. Tosafot disagrees, which is similar to Rashi's view in the Gemara and Sukkah. You can see here that the Masorah of the Shas notes that Rashi's view in Sukkah is different to what is written here, and follows the Girsa, or favors the Girsa that Tosafot brings over here, and the interpretation that Tosafot brings. As we saw before already about what the nature of the question is over here, here the Gemara is asking the question about whether Itzim in general are subject to Kedushat Shvi'it or not subject to Kedushat Shvi'it. Unlike Rashi, who thinks the question only revolves around the Atzei Mishcha. And number two is, he says the proof is from the fact that Rabbi Yossi does not hold of this limud of Biuran v'Natan Shaveh. The fact that he allows Mishran Kvusa shows you that he does not hold of that limud of Biuran v'Natan Shaveh. If you do not hold of that requirement of Biuran v'Natan Shaveh, that means that Eitzim would be subject to Kedushat Shvi'it. Because the failure, according to the Chachamim, in wood attaining Kedushat Shvi'it is because of the fact that it's Biuran v'Natan Einan Shaveh. It doesn't happen at the same time. So with the Rabbanan who have that drasha, Eitzim are not subject to Kedushat Shvi'it. Also, you can't utilize Peirot Shvi'it for items like Kvusa and Mishra. On the other hand, for Rabbi Yossi, who does not believe in that drasha, so therefore you can use the Peirot Shvi'it for Mishran Kvusa, therefore you also will have Kedushat Shvi'it with regards to Eitzim, because there is no such requirement or qualification that it be Hanatan Ubiran Shaveh. As long as it's coming from the field and you're going to get Hanah from it, it will be subject to Kedushat Shvi'it. Now that pshat runs into a problem, which is if Eitzim do have Kedushat Shvi'it, how do we utilize them for Hasaka after the Zman of Biur? So Tosafot gives a number of answers. One is that it's Batel the Gabei Shar Eitzim, or Tosafot rewords or modifies the question to be not whether Eitzim have Kedushat Shvi'it, whether wood is subject to Shvi'it or not subject to Shvi'it, but items that do have Hana'ah Biran Shaveh, like the example in the Gemara in Sukkah of a Lulav that is used as a broom. So there it's Hanato Ubiro Shaveh. So the lulav should be subject to Kedushat Shvi'it. Or, in the case of the Atzei Mishkan, that also, where Biuran and Hanatan Shaveh, where they are subject to Shvi'it, are you then allowed to utilize them for something where Hanatan and Biuranatan ain't Shaveh? For instance, do Hasaka. And that would be subject to the Machloket Tanaim that we saw here, which is according to the Rabbanon, no. Because you can only utilize something in a manner that's Hanatan and Biuran Shaveh. Whereas for Rabbi Yossi, you would be allowed to utilize them in this alternate manner, similar to what he says by Kvusa and Mishra. But that would mean that all other wood is not subject to Kedushat Shvi'it, and that's how we would be able to use it as firewood in the Shvi'it, or really after the Shvi'it, after the Zman HaBiur. Tosafot doesn't love that answer, and favors the first explanation that he brought above, which is that it's an absolute machloket about whether Eitzim are subject to Kedushat Shvi'it or not. And therefore, he's faced with this problem. According to Rabbi Yossi, how do you have firewood after Zman HaBiur? The Rabbeinu Tam suggests that the answer is that it's only subject to Shvi'it if the tree itself grew during the Shvi'it. And it's not for trees that pre-existed the Shvi'it that this din applies, but only applies to items that grew on Shvi'it itself. And the things that grew of their own or started to emerge on their own during Shvi'it, not things that were planted and were growing before that point in time. Kaman Azla Adetanya, who is the author of this braita? Li'achla v'lo l'lugma, li'achla v'lo l'ziluf, li'achla v'lo l'asot mimena afikt vizin. So you can eat it and not use it as a salve. You can eat it and not use it to sprinkle in your house. Usually they used to use wine and sprinkle in the house to mat the dust down. But they also used to do it with wine because then it gave a nice aroma to it. So again, this is only for someone who is very particular in nature or very wealthy. V'lo lasot mimeno afikt vizin. Afikt vizin is a type of liquid that is ingested that causes the person to disgorge everything that they have eaten. So you can't use it for that because there you're not going to eat it, swallow it. You're swallowing it for it to come back out and be wasted in the end. Come on, who's that like? Kirebi Yossi. That's like Rabbi Yossi. Dikra bonan ikanami mishro kvusa. Because if you were giving examples of items that you could not use it for, then for the Rabbanon, you would also include soaking the flax or laundering. On the other hand, for Rabbi Yossi, these particular items are excluded because these are not shaveh l'chol adam. These are not utilized by everyone. They're only valuable to a particular class or type of individual. They're not something that's hanah shaveh l'chol. And so therefore, these examples for Rabbi Yossi capture exactly what he thinks is problematic to do with perot shvi'it. For the Rabbanon, you should have included in the list Mishra and Kvusa, because that would have told you, again, first of all, they argue on Rabbi Yossi, and it would be important to highlight that this is the area where they argue, but again, those would be items where it is utilized by everyone, and despite that fact, it cannot be used for that. The perot tree cannot be used for that. All right, so we're going to stop here by the two dots in the middle of Kufbet Amud Aleph.